Good to see you.
Good to see you. My dear Herbert, I have something very peculiar to tell you.
My dear Handel, I shall esteem and respect your confidence.
I love, I adore Estella.
Exactly. Well?
Was that all you can say? Well?
What next, I mean? Of course I know that.
How?
Well, from you.
I never told you.
You never told me that you've got your hair cut. But I've had senses to perceive it. You brought your admiration and portmanteau here together. Told me? Why, you've always been telling me, and all day long, that you've adored her from the first moment you saw her.
Well, very well, then. I've never left off adoring her. And now she's come back an even more beautiful and elegant creature. And if I adored her before, I now doubly adore her.
Lucky for you, then, Handel, that you're picked out for her. Have you any idea of her views on the adoration question? Oh,
she's thousands of miles away from me. You call me a lucky fellow. Of course I am. I was a blacksmith's boy but yesterday, and now I'm... What shall I say I am today?
A good fellow. With impetuosity and hesitations, boldness and diffidence, action and dreaming curiously married in him.
Yet when I think of Estella, I can't tell you how uncertain I feel and how exposed to hundreds of chances. Avoiding forbidden ground, I may still say that on the charity of one unnamed person all my expectations depend, and yet only to know so vaguely what they are.
Now, Handel, it seems to me that in the despondency of the tender passion we are looking into our gift horse's mouth with a magnifying glass and overlooking one of the best points of the animal.
I don't...
Didn't you tell me that Mr. Jaggers told you in the beginning that you were not endowed with expectations only? And of all men in London, would Mr. Jaggers say it unless he was sure of his ground? Result? You must bide your time. You'll be 21 before you know where you are, and then perhaps you'll get further enlightenment. At any event, you'll be nearer getting it, for it must come at last.
What a hopeful disposition you have.
I've not much else. The good sense of what I've said is my father's. Now, Handel, I want to make myself disagreeable to you for a moment, positively repulsive.
You won't succeed.
Right. Here we go. I've been thinking with my feet up on the fender here that Estella surely cannot be a condition of your inheritance if she were never referred to by your guardian. He's never hinted at marriage.
Never.
Now, not being bound to her, can you not detach yourself from her?
What he was saying cut at me like the marsh winds coming from the sea.
Perhaps you have been, from very young, too romantic. Think of her bringing up, and think of Miss Havisham. Think of what Estella is herself. Handler, now you abominate me. It all may lead to miserable things.
I know it all, but I can't help it.
You can't detach yourself.
It's impossible.
Well, now to other things. Have you ever had the opportunity of remarking, down in your part of the country, the children of not exactly suitable marriages are always most anxious to be married?
Is it so?
I ask, because it's decidedly the case with us. Indeed, I think we're all engaged, except the baby.
You are?
I am. But it's a secret.
Tell me! I will honour your secret! May I ask her name?
Clara.
She lives in London?
Yes. I ought to mention she's rather below my mother's nonsensical family notions. Her father had to do with the victualling of passenger ships.
What is he now?
An invalid.
Living on...
the first floor. I've never seen him, but he makes tremendous rows and pegs at the floor with some frightful instrument. I always expect him to come tumbling through the ceiling. Oh, the moment I realise capital, I shall marry Clara. But you can't marry, you know, while you're looking about you.
Contemplating what a difficult vision the realising of capital was, I put my hands in my pocket and found Wopsle's playbill.
Bless my heart! It's tonight!
So, as soon as I had pledged myself to comfort and abet Herbert in the affair of his heart by all practicable and impracticable means, we warmly shook hands upon our mutual confidence, blew out the candles, made up the fire, locked the door, and issued forth in quest of Elsinore. On our arrival in Denmark, the king and queen were sitting in two armchairs on a kitchen table, with the Danish nobility... a noble boy in boots, an old man and a girl, in total attendance.
The ghost had a heavy cough.
I am my father's spirit. The certain term to walk the night.
Get back to bed, Dave.
The royal phantom also carried a ghostly manuscript to which it had the appearance of occasionally referring.
I can tell a tale
whose... Turn over!
Upon my unfortunate townsman, every incident accumulated.
Not to be.
Toss up for it.
The slings and arrows of a
real
of troubles.
But Wopsle's greatest trials were in the churchyard.
Had a tongue in it and could sing. Britannia rules the wide. It is my greatest, it never shall be.
Anyone knowing Mr. Wopsle would know he could never have returned a skull without dusting his fingers on a white napkin. The arrival of the body for internment was a signal for the general joy which continued and attended Mr. Wopsle throughout his struggle with Laertes on the brink of the orchestra and the grave, never to slacken until he had tumbled the king off the kitchen table and had himself died by inches from the ankle upwards.
Take up the body!
Let's go at once, in case we have to meet him.
Mr. Pitt, and friend.
Yes?
Mr. Waldengarver would be glad to have the honour.
Waldengarver? Probably Wopsle.
A few steps, please. How do you think he looked? I dressed him.
Very nice.
When he come to the grave, he showed his cloak beautiful. But judging from the wing, it looked to me that when he see the ghost in the Queen's apartments, he might have made more of his stockings. This way. Ah,
gentlemen. I am proud to see you. I hope, Mr. Pip, you will excuse my sending round. I had the happiness to know you in former times, and the drama has ever had a claim which has ever been acknowledged on the noble and affluent.
Oh, skin the stocking off, Mr. Waldengarver, on your bustum. Bustum, your bust, 35 shillings. Shakespeare never was complimented with a finer pair. Keep quiet in your chair now. Leave them to me.
How did you like my reading of the character, gentlemen?
Massive and concrete.
Massive and concrete?
I am glad to have your approbation, gentlemen. And
but I'll tell you one thing, Mr. Waldengarver. You're out in your reading of Hamlet when you get your legs in profile. The last Hamlet, as I dressed, made the same mistakes in his reading at rehearsal till I got him to put a large red wafer on each of his shins. And then at that rehearsal, which was the last, I went in front, sir, and whenever his reading brought him into profile, I called out, "I don't see no wafers!" And at night, his reading was lovely.
My view is a little classic and thoughtful for them here, but they will improve. They will improve.
Now, your braces, Mr. Waldengarver. Please.
Should we have him home to supper?
It would be kind.
Beautiful.
And so he went to Barnard's with us, wrapped up to the eyes. And we did our best for him, and he sat until 2 o'clock in the morning reviewing his success and developing his plans for reviving the drama. Miserably I went to bed after all, and miserably thought of Estella, and miserably dreamed that my expectations were all cancelled, and that I had to give my hand in marriage to Herbert's Clara, or play Hamlet to Miss Havisham's ghost before 20,000 people without knowing 20 words of it.
I am to come to London the day after tomorrow by the midday coach. I believe it was settled you should meet me. At all events, Miss Havisham has the impression, and I write in obedience to it. She sends you her regard. Yours, Estella.
My appetite vanished instantly, and I knew no peace or rest until the day arrived. And even on that day, I began haunting the coach office in Cheapside before the vehicle had even left the Blue Boar in our town.
Hello, Mr. Pip. How'd you do? I should hardly have thought this was your beat.
I'm waiting for someone arriving by coach. How's the castle? And the aged?
Both flourishing, thank ye, and particularly the aged. He's in wonderful feather. He'll be 82 next birthday. I've a notion of firing 82 times, if the neighbourhood shouldn't complain, and that cannon of mine prove equal to the pressure. But this isn't London talk. Where do you think I'm going?
The office?
Newgate. We're in a robbery case just at present, and I've been down the road taking a squint at the scene of action, and thereupon must have a word or two with our client.
Did your client commit the robbery?
Bless your soul and body, no. But he's accused of it. So might you or I be.
Only neither of us is.
You're a deep one, Mr. Pip. Would you like to have a look at Newgate? Have you time to spare? Good.
It was visiting time, and a potman was going his rounds with beer, which prisoners bought behind bars in yards. A frowsy, ugly, disorderly, depressing scene it was. Wemmick walked, it seemed to me, among the prisoners, much as a gardener might stroll among his plants.
Mr. Wemmick?
What, Captain Tom, are you there? Yeah. Indeed.
Mr. Wemmick?
Is that Black Bill behind the cistern? Why, no. I didn't look for you these 2 months. How do you find yourself?
With his postbox in an immovable state, Wemmick was highly popular, and something of Mr. Jaggers hung about him as he went about Mr. Jaggers' business.
It's no use, my boy. I'm only a subordinate. If you're unable to make up your quantum, you better address yourself to another principal. There are plenty of them in the profession, you know. That's my recommendation to you, speaking as a subordinate.
Thus we walked through Wemmick's greenhouse.
Notice the only man I shall shake hands with. How are you, Colonel?
All right, Wemmick.
Everything was done that could be done, but the evidence was too strong for us, Colonel.
Yes, but I don't care.
No, you don't care. Served His Majesty, this one. Was a soldier in the line and bought his discharge.
I think I shall be out of this on Monday, sir.
Perhaps, but there's no knowing.
I'm glad to have the chance of bidding you goodbye, Mr. Wemmick. If what I had upon me when taken had been real, Mr. Wemmick, I should have asked the favour of your wearing another ring in acknowledgement of your attention.
I'll accept the will for the deed, Colonel. You were a pigeon fancier, I'm told,
yeah.
And you had a remarkable breed of tumblers. Could you commission any friend of yours to bring me a pair, if you've no further use for them?
It shall be done, sir.
And they shall be taken care of. Good afternoon, Colonel. Good
afternoon, sir.
Goodbye. A coiner. Very good workman. The recorder's report is made today, and he's sure to be executed Monday. Still, you see, as far as it goes, a pair of pigeons are portable property, all the same.
You certainly know everybody.
I must see my man, then we'll leave. You look impatient, Mr. Pip. Mind you, Mr. Pip, I don't know that Mr. Jaggers does a better thing than the way he keeps himself so high. He's always so high. His constant height is of a piece with his immense abilities. That colonel would no more dare take leave of him than that turnkey back there might ask him his intentions respecting the case. Then, between his height and them, he slips in his subordinate. Don't you see? And so he has 'em, soul and body. I'll leave you here.
Thank you. At the coach office, with 3 hours still in hand, I consumed the whole time in thinking how strange it was that I should be encompassed by all this taint of prison and crime that in my childhood first touched me out on our lonely marshes on a winter evening. Then, at long last, after I had beaten the prison dust from my feet and clothes, I saw her face at the coach window and her waving to me.
Yes, those are all mine.
I'm still not aware of your next destination.
Richmond. The distance is 10 miles. I am to have a carriage, and you are to take me. This is my purse, and you are to pay my charges out of it. Oh, you must take it. We have no choice, you and I, but to obey our instructions. We are not free to follow our own devices.
carriage will have to be sent for, Estella. Will you rest here a little?
Yes, I am to. And I am to drink some tea, and you are to take care of me the whole while.
I was aware the room smelt of a strong combination of stable and soup stock, yet it was all in all to me, Estella being in it. I thought that with her, I could have been happy there for life.
I'm going to live at Richmond at great expense with a lady who has the power, or says she has, of taking me about, introducing me, and showing people to me and me to people.
You speak of yourself as if you were someone else.
Where did you learn how I speak of others? Come, come. You must not expect me to go to school to you. How do you thrive with Mr. Pocket?
I live quite pleasantly. At least...
What?
As pleasantly as I could anywhere away from you.
Oh, you silly boy. How can you talk such nonsense? His father, Mr. Matthew Pocket, is superior to the other members of Miss Havisham's family.
Yes.
You know the rest of them beset her with reports and insinuations to your disadvantage. You are the torment and the occupation of their lives. You can scarcely realize the hatred those people feel for you.
I hope I may suppose that you would not be amused if they did me any harm.
You may be certain I laugh because they fail. You've no idea what satisfaction it gives me to see those people thwarted, or what an enjoyable sense of the ridiculous I have when they are made ridiculous. You weren't brought up in that horror house from a mere baby. I was. You may set your mind at rest that those people will never, in 100 years, impair your ground with Miss Havisham. And I am grateful to you for being the cause of their being so busy and so mean in vain. And there's my hand on it. Do you kiss my hand in the same spirit in which I once let you kiss my cheek?
If I say yes, may I kiss the cheek again?
If you like. Now you are to take me to Richmond.
Her reverting to this tone, as if we were indeed mere puppets, gave me pain. Whatever her tone with me happened to be, I could put no trust in it and build no hope on it. And yet I went on, against trust and against hope.
What place is that?
Newgate, I think.
Wretches.
Mr. Jaggers has the reputation of being more in the secrets of that dismal place than any man in London.
He is more in the secrets of every place, I think. What is your experience of him? Do you advance with him?
I've dined at his private house. Has my guardian any charge of you while you are here?
God forbid.
This is Hammersmith. Mr. Matthew Pocket lives by the river, down there. It's no great distance from Richmond. I hope I shall see you.
Oh, you are to. To come when you think proper. You've already been mentioned to the family.
I wonder Miss Havisham could part with you again so soon.
It's part of her plans for me, Pip. I am to write to her constantly and see her regularly and report how I go on. I and the jewels, for they are nearly all mine now.
As I grew accustomed to my expectations, I began to be aware of their effect upon myself and those around me. I lived in a state of chronic unease respecting my behaviour to Joe and Biddy, yet I thought of no one but Estella. My lavish habits led Herbert into expenses he could not afford, and me into a quantity of debt. Herbert would accept no help, so he got into difficulties, and with increasing difficulty continued to look about him, while I haunted Richmond.
I find the truth to be, Handel, that an opening won't come to one, but one must go to it. So I have been, all day.
My dear Herbert, we are getting on badly.
My dear Handel, if you will believe me, those very words were on my lips.
Then, Herbert, let us look into our affairs.
Hmm?
We'll order a rather special dinner, with a bottle of something similarly out of the common way, take a bundle of pens, a copious supply of ink, and plenty of paper. We'll write across the top of one, Memorandum of Pip's Debts, and across another, Memorandum of Herbert's Debts, and see how we go.
Each of us then referred to a confused heap of papers which had been thrown into drawers, worn into holes in pockets, stuck for weeks into the looking-glass, and otherwise damaged.
How are you getting on?
They're mounting up, Handel.
Be firm, Herbert. Look the thing in the face.
I would, but it's staring me out of countenance.
Estimate in round numbers. Leave a margin. If it's £164.03, put down £200.
Really? Your business powers are remarkable.
Though full of admiration for myself at the time, it did turn out to be a very expensive device.
It's for you. Handel?
I am begged to be informed that Mrs. J. Gargery departed this life on Monday last at 6:20 in the evening, and my attendance is requested at the interment Monday next at 3:00. It was the first time that a grave had opened in my road of life. Whatever my fortunes might have been, I could scarcely recall my sister with much tenderness. But I suppose there is a shock of regret which may exist without much tenderness. And increasingly, I was seized with a violent indignation against the attacker from whom she had suffered so much, and I felt, on sufficient proof, I could have revengefully pursued Orlick or anyone else to the last extremity.
Joe. Dear Joe, how are you?
That old chap. You knowed her when she was a fine figure of a...
Biddy, looking very neat and modest in her black dress in the midst of all the over mourning, went quietly here and there, helpful. Near the food table, Pumblechook, in a black cloak and several yards of hatband, stuffed himself and made obsequious movements to catch my attention.
Which I mean to say, Pip, sir, as I would in preference have carried her to the church myself, along with 3 or 4 friendly ones what come to it with willing hearts and arms. But it were considered what the neighbours would look down on such and would be of opinions, as it were, wanting in respect.
Pocket handkerchiefs out, all. We're ready.
So, handkerchiefs out, as if all our noses were bleeding, we filed from the house. The remains of my poor sister had been brought round by the kitchen door, and it being a point of undertaking ceremony that the 6 bearers must be stifled and blinded under a horrible black velvet housing, the whole looked like a blind monster with 12 human legs shuffling and blundering under the guidance of 2 keepers. With the range of marshes clear around us, with the sails of ships on the river gleaming white from them, we went into the churchyard, close to the graves of my unknown parents, Philip Pirrip, late of this parish, and also Georgiana, wife of the above. And there, my sister was laid quietly in the earth, while the larks sang high above, and the light wind strewed the grave with beautiful shadows of clouds and trees. Might I sleep in my old room, Joe?
Rather, Pip, old chap.
I'm going outside. You finish your pipe.
Pip.
Biddy, I think you might have written to me about these sad matters.
Do you, Mr. Pip? I should have if I'd thought that.
I'm not meaning to be unkind. I suppose it will be difficult for you to remain here now.
Oh, I can't. I've been speaking to Mrs. Hubble, and I'm going to her tomorrow. I hope we shall be able to take some care of Mr. Gargery together until he settles down.
I shall be often down here now. I'm not going to leave poor Joe alone. Biddy, don't you hear me? Why don't you speak?
Are you quite sure you will come to see him often?
How are you going to live? If you want any money...
I'm going to try to get the place of mistress in the new school nearly finished. I can be well recommended by all the neighbours, and the new schools aren't like the old ones, Mr. Pip. But I learnt a good deal from you, and I've had time to improve.
I think you will always improve, Biddy.
Under any circumstances.
Except in my bad side of human nature.
How did my sister die?
For 4 days she'd been in one of her bad states, though they had got better of late rather than worse, when she came out of it in the evening, just at tea time, and said quite plainly, Joe. As she'd never said a word for a long while, I ran and fetched in Mr. Gadry from the forge. She made signs to me that she wanted him to sit down close to her and wanted me to put her arms round his neck. So I put them round his neck, and she laid her head down on his shoulder quite content and satisfied. And so she presently said, Joe, again, and once pardon, and once Pip. And so she never lifted her head up any more, and it was just an hour later when we laid it down on her own bed, because we'd found she was gone.
Biddy. Biddy cried, and the darkening garden and the lane and the stars that were coming out were blurred by my own sight. Though I knew in my heart Biddy was right, that I should not come back.
Well, Pip, I must call you Mr. Pip today. Congratulations, Mr. Pip. Take a chair. Now, my young friend, I'm going to have a word or two with you.
If you please, sir.
What do you suppose you are living at the rate of?
At the rate of, sir?
At the rate of.
I cannot answer.
I thought so. Now I've asked you a question, my friend. Do you have anything to ask me?
Is my benefactor to be made known to me today?
No. Ask another.
Is that confidence to be imparted to me soon?
Waive that a moment and ask again.
Have I anything to receive, sir?
I thought we should come to it. Mr. Wemmick! Give me the piece of paper.
Mr. Jaggers.
Now, take this piece of paper in your hand. Good. Unfold it and tell me what it is.
This is a banknote for £500.
And a very handsome sum of money, too, I think. You consider it so?
How could I otherwise?
It is your own.
Oh.
It is a present to you on this day in earnest of your expectations. You will now take your money affairs into your own hands, and you will draw from Wemmick £125 per quarter until you're in communication with the fountainhead and no longer with the mere agent. I am the mere agent. I execute my instructions, and I'm paid for doing so. I think them injudicious, but I'm not paid for giving any opinion on their merits.
There was a question just now, Mr. Jaggers,
mm-hmm.
which you desired me to waive for the moment.
Speak.
Is it likely that my patron will soon come to London?
Now, here we must revert to the evening when we first encountered one another in your village. What did I tell you then, Pip?
That it might be years hence when that person appeared.
Just so. That is my answer.
If that is all you have to say, sir, then there can be nothing left for me to say.
Hmm. Where will you dine on this auspicious day?
At my chambers with Herbert. Would you favour us with your company?
Willingly. But, Mr. Pip, I insist in walking home with you in order that you shall make no, I say, no extra preparation for me. But first I have a letter or two to write, and my hands to wash.
I'll wait outside.
Please.
Mr. Wemmick, I want to ask your opinion. I am very desirous to help a friend. This friend is trying to get on in commercial life, but has no money and finds it difficult and disheartening to make a beginning. And now I want to help him.
With money down?
With some money down, and perhaps some anticipation of my expectations.
Mr. Pip, there are 6 bridges up to Chelsea Reach to choose from.
I don't understand.
From which to pitch your money into the Thames and know the end of it. Serve a friend, and that is what happens.
This is most discouraging.
Meant to be. A man should never invest portable property in a friend unless he wants to get rid of said friend.
And that is your deliberate opinion, Mr. Wemmick?
That is my deliberate opinion in this office.
But would that be your opinion in Walworth?
Mr. Pip, Walworth is one place, this office is another. Much as the aged is one person and Mr. Jaggers another. They must not be confounded together. My Walworth sentiments must be taken at Walworth. None but my official sentiments can be taken here.
Very well. Then I shall look you up at Walworth. You may depend on it.
Mr. Pip, you will be welcome there in any private or personal capacity.
The next Sunday, on arriving at the castle, I found the Union Jack flying and the drawbridge up.
My son, sir, left word he would soon be home from his afternoon walk. He's very regular in his walks, is my son. Very regular in everything, is my son. Come in. His business is the law.
Yes.
Which makes it more surprising in my son, for he was brought up to wine coopering. He started in the city of London because me having an infirmity, for I'm hard of hearing, sir.
Really?
So my son went into law.
I was suddenly startled by a little wooden flap with John on it tumbling out of the side of the chimney.
My son's come home.
Outside, the aged was so delighted to work the drawbridge again that I made no offer to assist him, but stood quiet until Wemmick had come across the 4 feet of water and had presented me to Miss Skiffins. Miss Skiffins was of a wooden appearance and, like her escort, in the post-box branch of the service. But she seemed a good sort of fellow and showed a high regard for the aged.
The secret of these flaps is only known to the aged, Miss Skiffins, and me.
Miss Skiffins smiled demurely.
Come and see how the island looks.
And that is why I want to help him. He is my friend. At one point, we even competed for our prospects. He has a generous soul, and I want my own good fortune to reflect some rays on him. He must never, never know. But how to do so, I need help from you and your knowledge of business, men, and affairs.
Well, Mr. Pip, I must tell you one thing. This is devilish good of you.
Well, so you'll help me to be good, then?
It's not my trade.
Nor is here your trading place.
You're right. You hit the nail on the head, Mr. Pip. I'll put my considering cap on. I think it can all be done by degrees. Skiffins, that's her brother, is an accountant and an agent. I'll look him up and go to work for you.
I thank you 10,000 times.
No, I thank you. For though we are strictly in our private and personal capacities, still it may be mentioned that there are Newgate cobwebs about, and it brushes them away.
The upshot was we found a willing young shipping broker called Clarica, who wanted intelligent help, capital, and in due course a partner. Between Clarica and me, secret articles were signed, of which Herbert was the subject. I shall never forget the radiant face Herbert presented one afternoon. He had
fallen in with this mighty nice merchant, Clarica. Handle, he likes me. Handle, this may be the opening. No more looking about.
And the day he entered Clarica's house, he talked the whole evening in one gigantic flush of pleasure and success. And when I went to bed, I really did cry in good earnest to think that my expectations had done some good to somebody. I was often seeing Estella at Mrs. Brandley's house in Richmond, or accompanying her on picnics, fete days, to plays, operas, all sorts of pleasures, though they were miseries to me. I never had 1 hour's happiness in her society, and yet daily my mind harped on the happiness of having her with me unto death.
Pip, will you never take warning?
Of what?
Me.
Warning not to be attracted to you, do you mean?
If you don't know what I mean, you are blind.
At any rate, this time you've some of me to you.
Miss Havisham wishes to have me for a day at Satch's house. You are to take me there and bring me back, if you will. She would rather I did not travel alone and objects to receiving my maid, for she has a sensitive horror of being talked of by such people. Can you take me?
Stella.
The day after tomorrow, if you please. You are to pay all charges out of my purse. You hear the conditions of your going.
And I must obey.
Needless to say, there was no change at Satis House. But seeing Miss Havisham, referring back to all of Estella's letters and names and conditions of the men she'd fascinated, I saw there the degree to which Estella was set to wreak Miss Havisham's revenge on men. Then something happened. We were seated by the fire, and Miss Havisham, still with Estella's arm drawn through her own and still clutching Estella's hand in hers, found Estella beginning to detach herself.
What? Are you tired of me?
Only a little tired of myself.
Speak the truth. You're tired of me. You stock and stone. You cold, cold heart.
You reproach me for being cold?
Aren't you?
You should know. I am what you have made me. Take all the praise, take all the blame, take all the cusses, take all the failure. In short, take me.
Look at her. So hard and thankless on the hearth where she was reared. Where I took her into this wretched breast when it was first bleeding from its stabs. Where I have lavished years of tenderness upon her.
But what would you have? You have been very good to me, and I owe everything to you. What would you have?
Love.
You have it.
I have not.
If you ask me to give you what you never gave me, my gratitude and duty cannot do the impossible.
And I never gave her love. Did I never give her a burning love? Inseparable from jealousy at all times and from sharp pain. Let her call me mad.
Why should I? I, of all people. Does anyone live who knows what set purposes you have half as well as I do? Does anyone live who knows what a steady memory you have?
All soon forgotten.
No, treasured up in memory. When have you found me false to your teaching? When have you found me giving admission to anything you excluded? Be just to me.
So proud, so proud.
Who taught me to be proud? Who praised me when I learnt my lesson?
So hard, so hard.
Who taught me to be hard?
But to be proud and hard to me. Estella, Estella, Estella. To be proud and hard to me.
I can't think why you should be so unreasonable when I come to see you after a separation. I have never forgotten your wrongs and their causes. I have never been unfaithful to you or your schooling. I have never shown any weakness that I can charge myself with.
Would it be weakness to return my love? But yes. Yes. She would call it so.
I must be taken as I have been made. The success is not mine, nor the failure. But the two together make me.
It is impossible to turn this leaf of my life without putting Bentley Drummle's name upon it, or I would very gladly. He began to haunt Estella, and she, to my horror, to allow it.
Are you tired, Estella?
Rather, Pip. But I shouldn't be, for I have my letter to Satis House to write before I sleep.
Recounting tonight's triumph. Surely a poor one, Estella.
I didn't know there had been any.
Do look at that fellow in the corner.
Why?
He's been hovering about you all night.
Moths and all sorts of ugly creatures hover about a lighted candle. Can the candle help it?
No, but cannot Estella help it? It makes me wretched that you should encourage a man so generally despised as Drummle. He's as ungainly within as without, a deficient, ill-tempered, lowering, stupid fellow. You know he has nothing to recommend him but money and a ridiculous role of addle-headed predecessors.
Well?
Well, that makes me wretched.
It's not worth discussing.
I cannot bear it that people should say she throws away her graces and attractions on a mere boor, the lowest of the crowd.
I can bear it.
There is no doubt. For even tonight I've seen you give him smiles and looks such as you never give to me.
Do you want me then to deceive and entrap you?
Is that what you're doing to him?
Yes, and many others. All of them but you. There's Mrs. Brandley. I'll say no more.
I was 23 years of age. Herbert and I now lived in Garden Court, Temple, down by the river. One night, business having taken Herbert to Marseille, I was alone. It was wretched weather, stormy and wet, and mud deep in all the streets. The wind shook the top of the house like discharges of cannon or breakings of a sea. The lamps on the staircase and court were blown out, and the coal fires in barges on the river were being carried away before the wind like red-hot splashes in the rain. As I shut my book, I could hear footsteps on the stair. I went out onto the landing with my lamp.
There is someone down there, is there not?
Here.
What floor do you want?
The top. Mr. Pip.
That's my name. There is nothing the matter.
Nothing.